Where are you at today, Victor? Are you West Coast, D.C., Chicago?
I'm actually in Louisville, Kentucky.
or Louisville, of course.
So yeah, I'm out here speaking there at a conference about talent acquisition and why hiring veterans matters. So that's how they got me out here. This is a two-day conference on how mid to small businesses are reinvigorating the Rust Belt. So the Midwest states that have been hardest hit by factories and companies packing up and leaving, you know, coal mining, steel mills, whatever. Now there's some movement to reinvigorate those areas. And obviously, when companies look to grow and get bigger and be competitive, we talk about talent acquisition and manpower. So, you know, I try to keep it on the forefront of people's minds. Don't forget the biggest, best talent pool that's already out there waiting for you, which are veterans.
Interesting. And are we? How many veterans are you looking for civilian employment, broadly defined, on a quarterly or annual basis? And has that flow changed much over the last couple of years? I know it was pretty consistent when we talked last about it.
Somewhere in the ballparks of tens of thousands.
Okay.
Right. So to give you just a ballpark, the number of people separating isn't as high as it used to be because the number of people in the military isn't as high as it used to be.
Correct. Yeah, exactly. And that's where I was kind of going with it. I know that the numbers are down a little bit because, you know, we're still in a quasi-active role, but not as much so as it would have been 3 years ago. Is my sense.
Right. So as of last year, the number of service members who separated from all five branches of service was roughly 200,000. Right. I would imagine that number will go down a little this year, in part because the DOD has different incentives for them to reenlist, to stay in longer, to pursue retirement. You know, there's a lot of benefits to staying in if your body can take it. For, you know, depending on what you do, it just depends on whether or not you are, you know, interested or committed to doing what you've been doing longer, right? And for a lot of people, a lot of individuals, a lot of families, that's just not an option. So they do their commitment for their contract, and then they go home.
Yep.
Or come home, I should say.
Well, look, it's you know, the military is frankly not that different than, you know, any, you know, big or small employer, right? You know, keep the ones you know versus trying to sort of rehire and retrain, right? And so if you can keep those folks, you know, satisfied, engaged, and, you know, motivated to stick around, you know, everyone's better off both sides. So, interesting.
Yeah, and I think each branch has a different strategy based on what typically works for them.
Sure.
For example, the Army being the largest branch of service has different personnel needs than, say, the Marine Corps. The Marine Corps being roughly the smallest branch of service, probably somewhere in there between the Marine Corps and the Coast Guard. But the rigors of the work, right, will probably drive your numbers as far as attrition goes, just because a lot of folks can't handle what they do for a long period of time over and over. You know, the Navy having the easiest road to recruitment, their numbers are usually pretty steady, as well as the Air Force, right? So it's very nuanced, but for the most part, you know, it's something that most folks, if they do it more than one contract, they tend to stay longer.
Yep, that makes sense. Well, awesome. Well, good luck. Thanks for taking time to touch base again. And I think, you know, what Brian and the Route 3 guys have done is they just tried to set up, you know, sort of, you know, periodic, you know, meetings with certain people that are, you know, either, you know, friends of Heat Sheets or users of Heat Sheets or prospective users of Heat Sheets. And, you know, you obviously as someone that's, you know, helped evaluate a little bit of the product, we thought it would be interesting just to spend a little bit of time. You're pretty aware that, you know, Heat Sheets, our genesis was in the event space and a little bit in the retail space. And in the retail space, what we were finding is a lot of the special forces guys were already using our products. And so about 2 years ago, we started to make more of a concerted effort to develop products that would, you know, address the needs of those folks, but also, you know, maybe the, you know, the broader universe of the service person, you know, either in a general level or in many ways more specifically kind of the, you know, the guys that are in the medical field, as our products are largely, you know, used to treat, you know, hypothermia and the protection from the elements. So with that as a background, I guess, you know, maybe give, you know, just remind me a little bit of, you know, your, you know, service background, you know, and a little bit of your, you know, your sort of, you know, career profile, which has been, you know, more interesting than most, and it's always good to sort of revisit a little bit.
Sure. So, yeah, I'll start with my time in the military. I served in a cold weather mountain warfare light infantry unit, and essentially we specialized in, you know, engaging the enemy where they are, typically in the mountains. For example, my unit deployed to Afghanistan, so we were pretty busy. You know, and I've mentioned to Chris before that I certainly wish I had, you know, one or two heat sheets in my pack for all the rigorous trainings that we had. You know, Fort Drum, the weather can get down to negative 30, and that temperature does not prohibit you from your day-to-day operations, your training, making sure that your warrior ethos is, are how should we say, honed and skilled. So you're out doing sledding, you're snowshoeing, you're, you know, cold weather training constantly, you're maintaining your vehicles, you're qualifying with weapons, you're doing everything that you would do in the warm weather. You know, as I look back on it, certainly I could say both stateside as well as in other elements, you know, when you're training in the water, you're training in the cold, you're training in the heat. One of the interesting things I also kind of reckoned on is I did some desert training when I was out at Fort Huachuca in Arizona. And, you know, as a big city kid, you don't realize that it gets extremely cold in the desert at night because you're always focused on how hot it is in the day. So
absolutely,
another element and environment where you certainly could benefit, or I could have benefited from these products, was when you're sitting out and it's 106 in a day, and that 106 turns to 60-something at night. You know, 60-something feels like, you know, 35 degrees. So
sure,
you're still at risk of hypothermia. You're still at risk of, you know, cold weather injuries and so on, you know, as well as the elements and everything else. So I think it's a natural progression to push the product out into the military space to get it in as many hands as possible. You know, I've got a buddy over in Afghanistan right now, former Special Forces guy, who's now over as a contractor, and I sent him over a few samples. And it's interesting to hear his critique because, you know, he's often said the same thing. This isn't as flimsy as the ones we used to use, and so on and so on. And then when I hear that, I'm rather surprised because, as you mentioned, the soft community has a limitless budget, so they kind of get whatever they want and do what they want to do with it. So to hear someone say, hey, you know, I really could have used something like this. What's the difference between this and this, and how do we get more, and yada, yada, that's really telling to me about the product. So
so when you were there, or even to your, you know, as you understand it now, do most of the kits include some sort of reflective insulation product of some sort?
Nope.
Or is the idea of reflective insulation also, you know, kind of being introduced? Where are we on that spectrum?
I think that would be considered like a specialized product, right? So either the individual would buy it and shove it in their kit, or a specialized unit would have some, right? Most big units don't have them just because, you know, the DoD says, hey, we give you what we have and you're going to use it and everybody's going to have the same thing. So what I think part of the issue is that more units aren't exposed to different environments and therefore more units just don't have it, right? If everyone did cold weather warfare, everyone would have something like this. Unfortunately, they don't. So the question would be, if you are you know, the 10th Mountain, the 101st, 82nd Airborne, 173rd Airborne. You're one of those type of units. How do you get this product or products like this exposed to those units, right? So part of it is, as you know, the tedious procurement process at the Pentagon. The other part of it is mustering up some demand. So, you know, certainly I think that, again, had guys really thought about it and we really pushed the envelope on this is something we need, we could have kind of pushed it up to command, and command may have said, oh, this is a priority or it's not a priority, right? Right now we're just trying to afford bullets. So, yeah. You know, it's making the business case and making the practical case isn't always that easy in the DoD environment, because it's just a different world. You know, we waste a lot of money on toilet paper and not enough money on other things. So it's just a byproduct of the government.
I guess two questions. One, who is the decision maker? And I'm sure the answer is it depends. But, you know, in general, you know, who is the decision maker? Is it something that trickles up from, you know, user up? Or is it some sort of a purchasing director? Or is it, you know, kind of literally the top, you know, the generals and above, you know, pushing it down? Who's making decisions, you know, on a product like, you know, heat sheets, which are largely a component of a broader kit as opposed to an individual purchase? You know, how is that done in the military?
Typically, those contracts are negotiated through procurement, and that's taking place at the Pentagon. Now, for example, if there is, like you mentioned, a general who happens to see a product or use it, let's say he or she goes camping or has kids to go camping, they go, wow, this is pretty cool. Like, we should use this. If they have that budgetary discretion, they can say, you know, hey, I want to see if we can get some of these products. Now, sometimes what happens is, for example, my unit used to what we called field test products, different type of cold weather, inclement weather gear, and so on. The DoD might say, hey, we want to try this out. You guys test this and tell us what you think. Oh, this is great. This is crappy, whatever. We give our feedback, and then they make a decision on whether or not they want to purchase it. So it's often driven through some relationship someone might have or a presentation someone might get an opportunity to present. Somewhere along the lines within either the procurement process at the Pentagon or speaking up with a higher level official in the military.
Got it. And how important is it, in your opinion, for a product to be, you know, made in the USA versus you know, made in China or elsewhere? Is it actually important, or is it more, you know, talk versus practice?
I think it's important for several reasons. One, when you buy U.S. products, you support U.S. jobs, right? So that's sure. The first reason. Secondly, yeah. The reason that's going to be most glaring is quality assurance. If it's made in Vietnam or India or China or whatever, there are few assurances of the quality. So, yeah, it looks good when I unwrap it and I'll use it, and then when the thread starts coming loose, then what, right? You're kind of stuck with what you have. You start trying to figure out ways to make it work. So most folks are going to tell you it matters because I want assurances on the quality. I want to know that it's American-made, that we can go right back to this company and say, hey, this batch that we got is flawed in some way, and we're going to have it rectified. You know, you can't always get that when you have other companies that are outside the U.S.
Sure. So talk a little bit. I know that you were very helpful in getting some of the samples out, you know, into the field, you know, into the Special Forces, the Navy, JSOC, and the Marine Sniper Group. Any feedback, you know, positive or negative that you've, you know, received with those folks, you know, to date?
Sure. So I reached out to several different people who kind of function in different environments because I wanted to have some diversity in feedback. So I'll start with my buddy George, who is a Marine Corps sniper and human intelligence guy. And George his first reaction was, you know, hey, oh yeah, I've seen those reflective things. I've never used them. Why not? Because it's not tactical, right? So I said, well, actually, there's some that are tactical. Let me send you something, and you kind of put it through the paces. And he did. You know, he said, well, I'm going to be down at Pendleton for a while doing some work. Send it to me. Got it to him. He took it out on the beach, right? He said, you know, I want to know what it does when you get it wet. I want to know what to do when you have to roll around with it, and so on. And he was rather impressed with how sturdy it was, but also, hey, if it comes in this tan color, right, like a, can we also get it in the green? Could we special order different colors, you know, different units, use different things, and so on. And I thought that was really good feedback, one, because if people are asking for modifications, they're also interested in the product. Yep. And, you know, I said, well, I really wanted a critical review. And he said, you know, you can't beat it to death, but you can certainly use it. And on top of that, if you're wet and you're cold and you need to be somewhere for a while sitting still, this is a good product, right? Even if you're just lying on top of it, it still insulates you from the ground, keeps your body heat reflected back to you, and so on. That's good feedback to me. For a guy who's been in Iraq, who's been in the desert, who's been wet, been, you know, who's done those insertion kind of things, his feedback was good. Reached out to another friend of mine, Navy Chief Roberts, who also spent some time with Joint Special Operations Command on the Navy side. And, you know, I said, hey, Chief, you know, if you were out to sea, if you were on the ship, you know, if you were, you know, in AFRICOM or Djibouti doing some work, would this product be worthwhile? You know, so, of course, he took it out the raft and had it around his backyard, let his son play with it, you know, see if he could destroy it. And he said, you know, it's interesting because he had the same feedback that Marine had, obviously. But again, the interest being centered around, can we modify the color, meaning can we also get it in green or can we get it in blue? He did mention that the reflective part would be helpful on ships because sometimes there is a concern of losing sailors on a ship and them having something that, you know, oh, we see them over there, right? Or even when they're doing rescue, like with the Coast Guard, they can also just wrap someone up pretty quick, and they quickly swans, especially if they've been out on the water for a while. So different branches, different operations, but some similar feedback. As I mentioned before, you know, my buddy over in Afghanistan really likes the product, really thought that, you know, his words were, I wouldn't test the Luma 4 ones just because that's a bullet magnet, but the other colors certainly, and the large one, was really a favorite in part because you're usually working in a team. If you and your buddy can kind of wrap up on it and, you know, conserve some body heat, especially if you need to bed down in the field, it's a good product, right? So
yeah, it's multi-use, right? Well, like that's some of the feedback we've gotten as well, right? It's not if you can use one piece of equipment for several things.
Correct.
So much the better,
more
right? Weights everything, right? So if you can use it for shelter, but also for protection, and also to potentially carry something for a litter, you know, now you maybe got something.
Absolutely. You know, as many functions that you can get out of one product, the more valuable that product is. And given
sure.
how easy it is to pack them and how light they are to carry, because every ounce matters, you're more likely to say, okay, I'll always use this, always need this, I'll pack this in. You know, when you're having to pick between things and you never know what you're going to need and you're not going to need, it's easier to kind of make that decision.
And on your color question, I think you know this, but just to be clear, if you talk to George or your other contacts you've sent these out to, the answer is yes on colors. We actually have in stock OD green and coyote brown and obviously white. We also have yellow, which is often used in marine environments and in sort of, you know, localized EMS situations. And then we also have done blue and orange. But the real answer is we can do any color you would given volume requirements. And we've even done, we did a couple of test materials with, you know, kind of patented or trademarked camo, right? So that's the other advantage of using a heat sheet versus, you know, your standard Chinese mylars. We can print on it, right? And, you know, for certain folks, that may make a lot of sense. It doesn't change the price dynamic materially. It probably adds another, you know, 30% or so, you know, in terms of, you know, putting sort of specialized print. But the color, you know, the color is largely different. If you get into some colors that are beyond the coyote brown or the OD green or the white or the yellow, we run into minimums. But certainly if they were broadly deployed, you know, those would be met relatively easily. The minimums are kind of in that 10,000 to 15,000 units, kind of depending on what the product is. Thank you for your service. Obviously, good luck in Louisville. And, you know, let's, you know, if there's anything I can do to follow up directly, you know, with the folks that you sent the product to, you know, George or the, you know, Joint Special Operations Command individuals or the sniper, you know, please let me know.